far are you going?
About 30 years.
In this week's episode, we get to review Right Stuff Gundam merchandise like Gundam Thunderbolt and Belladonna of Sadness.
Order sadness and a pain.
Alright.
Okay. What order did we want to do this in? Are we going to talk about Thunderbolt first? Or
I figured we can do the Gundam stuff in Thunderbolt first and then get on Belladonna of Sadness.
Okay. Right. I didn't really look through the other Blu-rays besides Thunderbolt very much, but are we just going to talk about like special features on them and that
yeah,
kind of thing?
I mean, yeah, pretty much, because everything else we've reviewed and it's all on our review page
right.
On our site. So people want to know our opinions on these Gundam shows that we got on from Right Stuff, they can go and check that out in previous
right.
episodes.
Yeah.
excuse me. Alright, so I'll just go ahead and get started on introductions. Welcome to the Anime of Yesteryear podcast. This is after the wrath of Hurricane Irma that came through my freaking state. Everything's good. Nothing really happened.
Another hurricane podcast.
Yeah. Hurricane The Reckoning Part 2 podcast.
yeah.
All right, so I am Dustin, and with me is my co-host John.
Yes.
And I hear a train in the background.
You're going to be hearing a lot of that.
Are we going to have Thomas the Tank Engine come by this podcast?
Yeah. Just put on some of that theme music.
Shining Time Station, is that the place you be at? Is George Carlton your new daddy?
Yeah, or Ringo Starr, or somebody is going to come riding on the train.
You never know at Shining Time Station. Alright, so, we got this has been a long time coming, and us talking about Gundam stuff from Right Stuff, because I keep getting Blu-rays in, I check them out, when I can, and they usually just sit on a shelf until we get around to reviewing them. But now that's that time, because our last one was like early this year. So what John and I did is we got the Blu-ray in for Mobile Suit Gundam Thunderbolt December Sky. Which I have heard about this, I think it came out like last year. It was like a web series, but it was like one of these like little shorts. And so what they did is they combined everything into like an hour long video, but they had it split up in chapters. So you can just get to the episodes you really liked.
I couldn't really tell where one began and one ended, but,
that's
I
true.
Guess that if you do the chapter codes, you can figure that out.
I mean, I kind of sort of figured when it started, because usually when there was like a very critical moment of like, you know, when they introduced, basically when they introduced a new mobile suit, or like Io or Daryl got really mad or something, or even after like Daryl's surgery, like it was like, okay, this is the end of a chapter, and then the next scene that I'm about to see is a new one. Because it seemed like there was almost like this almost like huge climactic thing that's going to happen, and then it moves on to the next scene. So then I'm like, okay, that's where they cut, probably where the ending was at, and they left the ending at the very, very end, and then they just moved on to the next episode.
Uh-huh.
Or chapter.
And then there's some stuff that was also, you know, because this was like a compilation film that I think was in theaters in Japan after these were in the, on the Bandai website or whatever.
Yeah.
And so they added in like 1 minute after the credits as well of new footage, which was the just some mobile suits being built just for like 1 minute or two. So that was not really a lot of new footage, but there was some.
I just remember like I got to the was this after the credits or before?
After the credits.
Okay, I did not see that. No, the only thing I remember was like they had the ending where Io got out of his cell somehow, and then they were able to like he was able to I guess like rescue his comrades like freaking buck naked.
Oh, yeah. Then there was like a few minutes of music, and then
okay.
Then they had a scene after that as well. It's like in general, you gotta expect a post-credit scene these days on everything.
Yeah, I didn't even expect the post-credits on this one, but I guess it doesn't surprise me.
Yeah. Well, it was not like significant or anything. It was just, I think it was, they were building a Zeong mobile suit and,
okay.
It's probably on YouTube, I would guess, that scene, but I don't know. Maybe they put a copyright claim if anyone uploads it so that people will buy their DVDs.
I mean, there's a lot of clips from Thunderbolt that's on YouTube, so like I would expect like the post-credit scene to be on YouTube at this point.
Probably.
Yeah. In terms of Thunderbolt, it was actually pretty good. I mean, some people online claim that it's like probably the best Universal Century Gundam we've gotten so far, but I liked it. I thought it was like okay. I think it was like probably the most darkest of like One Year Wars type stories, and I can agree to that because of just kind of how like really these people are like how messed up these people are. Because you've got, you know, Io that's basically like a war-crazed person that's, like, he finds the satisfaction in getting past, like, getting over the war by fighting in it. And being insane listening to jazz, pirated jazz music. And then you've got the ship's cap, like, it's the him, the ship's captain, which is the girl, which has, like, a pompadour mullet, which I find highly attractive on her. I dig that hairstyle. I think it's super hot on her. And then it's the other, like, nerdy Federation guy with, like, blue hair, because I'm looking at the Blu-ray cover right now. And so they're all kind of like friends. They all went to the Federation Academy kind of thing, and she's like a ship's captain or an acting captain. And she has her own way of dealing with the war, which is basically trying to OD on drugs.
Yes. I was surprised that they included that, because it's not the usual subject matter for a Gundam.
Yeah. But, I mean, this does add to the dark element of Thunderbolt, and, like, you know, this is the last part of the war. Everyone's on edge. Everyone's trying to find a way to kind of cope with it as they try to make it through.
Yeah. It's interesting because Gundam is usually kids oriented.
Yeah.
So that's why they don't usually bring that kind of stuff up, because they just want to look at the robot and buy their model kit. But yeah. In this case, there's, I guess this is aimed more at like adults or Tohaku who had seen the UC shows as a kid or that sort of thing.
Yeah, and it's adding on more to it, which is why I really like the UC universe, because you can just keep adding more stuff into it because you're just expanding on it than what's already there. Because, like, you know, this is a huge war, and we're looking at one particular unit out of, like, a bunch of Federation units, and
I think it's interesting that the OVAs always focus on the one-year war. It seems like they don't really do very many that are focused on like the Grips Conflict or Victory Gundam or any of the other like later periods in UC. It seems like the vast majority of UC projects that come out are focused on the original Mobile Suit Gundam period. Because you got like 08MS and 0080 and Igloo and now Thunderbolt. And so there's a whole lot of them that are set. Even 0083 is set pre Zeta, and there's not really anything that's as far as OVAs that's after that, other than Unicorn, which
right,
you know, becomes a TV show later on as well. So,
but for me, it's just kind of like, you know, the 1 year war is the one that like you get the most material from. Like, you know, like basically when it comes to war movies that have been out, you know, since World War II. It's always been like World War II movies because I guess there's just so much happening in there. And
you can make a one-year war thing into sort of like a World War II thing just in space.
Yeah, this is exactly what this is. So like, and I've grown up watching a ton of World War II movies, and I still like those to this day. So like, you know, for something like, I think that's probably the main appeal of Gundam is the fact that it's this giant war and everyone is in part of it, and there's so many different factions instead of just like focusing on the main character and the white base getting through it when there's all these other like entities happening. And then,
yeah, I guess that's true. That's the largest scale war that they have in the UC because a lot of the others are just like the Earth Federation's military is largely dissolved and not really doing anything. And they
later on,
just one ship with one robot. That's how most of the Gundams are, other than the 1 year war.
Yeah.
So that's probably why they have so much room to build on there compared with some of the others.
I think the closest that you can get with that also is, like, you can take Gundam Wing, for example, because Gundam Wing was also on a large-scale war, or at least, like, with Oz, or the Earth Alliance, like, invading the Earth, controlling the Earth, and obviously the space colonies. So, like, I think there's a lot of content you can put in there, because it's a large, like, global army that's taken over. And
there's a lot of manga and stuff that's based on it.
Yeah. The manga's mostly based on the main pilots of Wing, but like really nothing on like the grunts or whatever. But I mean, like, you can eventually like take like what Thunderbolt is and then apply that to like, you know, the AU series like Gundam Wing and then be like focusing on like some unit in Oz that's trying to get past like, you know, trying to invade an area or take over an Oz control area or like even an Oz pilot fighting a General Alliance person. And I haven't really seen a lot of those, except if you're going to find those probably in fan fiction somewhere. But I think most of the Gundam Wing fan fiction is yaoi incest porn. So I wouldn't really turn to that unless you had to heavily filter through all that to get to what you really want on fanfiction.net, which I have. I guess that site still exists.
You might want it.
Well, yeah. Maybe if you're CG.
There's some stuff like that for Seed, like the Stray stuff and... Where they, and I think there's one called Stargazer that's like an OVA, where they try to do with other pilots outside of the main story.
Yeah.
So, I wouldn't be surprised if there's something like that for Double O, but I don't really know of anything like that. But I haven't read any Double O manga, so I don't know.
I couldn't answer that either.
But I'm pretty sure that there's only like a movie of that, and there's not really any OVAs that build on that world or anything. So, and I think the movie's based on the main cast and stuff. But it is nice when you get to see like completely different characters here, because you couldn't really do this story with like Amuro or something. Because if you made Amuro into like he's using drugs, people would get mad and they're like, "You're ruining a beloved character.
You're ruining his purity." Well, the war kind of already did that already. So,
yeah,
his innocence.
Yeah,
but
this way you get freedom with the characters. What you can do, if people don't get mad at you because you're not ruining their childhood or whatever.
Yeah, and this one is just adding more crap to more crap onto like the mobile suits in it. Like, you know, the Gundam in this, the Thunderbolt, and then you get like the Psycho Zaku are basically just stuff on top of stuff on top of stuff in terms of like, hey, let's make this ridiculous and bulky and everything. It's, you know, we take a simple design and just add on to it. It's kind of like you take the Zaku's like the Sega Genesis and then you add on like the Sega CD and the 32X, but then you have to add on like another 32X on top of the 32X. And then you're remotely controlling this two or three Sega CDs into the one Sega CD. So that's kind of like what the Psycho Gundam kind of reminds me. It's like they had to amp up like, you know, the Gundam, but like instead of being the full armored Gundam, which is a mobile suit variation thing, they're like, oh, let's do that times five with more crap on it. And it can only work in space because if you put that stuff on that mobile suit on Earth with gravity, I don't think it's going to function very well.
No.
Yeah. But, but also like the fact that like with this, you know, with Thunderbolt coming out, you've got all these different mobile suit designs because, you know, after the Psycho Zaku came out and Daryl was like, well, now, you know, the technology's out there. And so now Zeon's going to do everything they can to make whatever they can to try to win the war at the Battle of Aku. So Battle of Aku had, like, all these different prototype, like, mobile suits. It's basically kind of like an animated version of, like, anything coming from the mobile suit variation model kits or the kit bashings from, like, the 80s. And just like, you know, let's throw everything at the wall and just see and try to make everything stick. So, like, with this one, like, you had Zaku's that had, like, the arms that the Zeon had were, like, you know, it was, you know, psycho-framed. Because I guess there's some cyber-new type controlling it. And then, you know, they're shooting down, you know, GMs or whatever. And then you got Daryl that's not in a psycho suit. He's got his robotic arms, and he's trying to pilot just, like, a normal Gilgoog in the fight. And, so, yeah, obviously the next Thunderbolt is basically going to be heavy on about with coup battles. I would assume, but
probably.
Yeah, it's like
it is out. Like it's just it hasn't come out here yet, but it's come out in Japan. And they're probably going to make a dub of it and put it on Blu-ray, and we'll get it eventually and review it. I bet.
Yeah, I mean, I actually liked the dub in this.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, it was a good dub.
Do you recognize any of the voice actors or anything?
I really couldn't recognize anyone noticeable in there. I didn't know if you noticed anything.
No, I didn't, and I'm not even sure where they recorded it. I would think it would probably be the NYAV Post, which they seem to use for all the recent Gundam dubs. But
okay,
it didn't. I didn't like recognize any particular. Okay, well here we go. They've got on Wikipedia for the main guy, Max Middleman. I don't know that name. Do you?
No, that's the actor's name.
Yeah.
No, I don't know that name.
And then Claudia Pierre, played by Jeremy Lay.
Yeah, I know her.
Yeah, I recognize the name. I don't know what exactly she's done, though, too.
I just think of a lot of 2000s popular anime from ADV.
Yeah, it does seem like that. I recognize the name, but I don't... it says she's Asuna in Sword Art Online. Okay.
Oh, there you go.
And then for Max Middleman, he's Saitama in One Punch Man. Okay.
Okay.
And then Cornelius is played by Christian Lamont. Graham is played by Ray Chase. Okay, well, I guess that's at least a few of them. And then Johnny Bosch is Daryl. Okay.
Okay.
Tara Sands is Carla. Todd Habercorn is Leighton.
Yeah, I know Todd Habercorn.
We played the video on our podcast where he is doing
Mr.
the
Knickerbocker.
Morning. Yeah.
Hey, Mr. Knickerbocker, what do you got?
And it says Max Middleman will also be Kira Yamato in the redub of Gundam Seed. Because for whatever reason, they're doing the dub of that over for the remastered version.
Supposedly they have to redub the whole show because of like the HD remake of Seed had like extra scenes or it wouldn't be able to time right with the original dub to it. Which in that case, like why in the hell did they have to make an HD remake of Gundam Seed? I guess it was just that popular in Japan.
I guess so. It's kind of like that's what Japan is doing these days. Because they don't want to come up with new ideas, so they just like remaster a show, redub it, and then re-air it, like with Dragon Ball Kai and a lot of things that they just.
I
think that they have Yu-Gi-Oh! On Again remastered and other stuff like that as well. One Piece,
popular shows. I get it that it's saving money, but at the same time, it's like you're not changing anything different in the story other than just, like, adding one extra scene here and there. And then they have to, like, go ahead and spend all this money redubbing it. And to me, that's just like, you know, F it. You know, just... Because I guess, is Right Stuff going to release just the HD remaster? Are they going to release both the original and the HD remaster?
Yeah, that's a weird thing. Because, I mean, there are going to be people who are going to want to see the original... and if you release the one version on DVD for the original and then maybe the remastered in Blu-ray on HD, that would be like a good compromise, I guess, to have both versions out. But then again, probably the singles for Seed and Destiny never really went up that much in value, I don't think. So if people probably want it, they can just buy the original DVDs and they'll get the original show.
I mean, those compilation movies do well enough to tell you the main story of both, you know, Seed and Seed Destiny. I mean, that's what I watched to review when we reviewed Seed and Seed Destiny a few years ago.
Yeah, that's available as well, and that's also dubbed. And I don't know if that's a separate dub as well of compared with the original TV show, or if they just took clips from the show and then made it into a movie, probably. But I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway, I thought the dub for this was pretty good, and the music was really good, and just the audio in general.
Yeah, I found the music interesting because, like, you got Daryl that's into, I guess it's kind of like I don't want to really say 50s music, but it's 50s style music.
And then 50s bebop, hard bop.
Yeah, and that was like I was kind of grooving to some of it. Like it got really catchy at the end. Good. I'm like, oh, this is pretty nice. But and then also
sometimes they're pretty weird though, like the farmer rodeo thing or whatever that they did, like kind
of. Oh yeah, that was like Io's dad's favorite song or whatever. And then I just like the fact that Daryl, like, he had a radio that said Xeon on it, so I guess Xeon made their own like retro looking radios on side three or whatever. But like I thought that was pretty cool because that radio kind of fit like the music coming out of it from in that style from that era, which I thought was interesting.
It's like pretty old looking radio.
Yeah.
See it in like a space in the future.
Yeah, I thought that was really cool. And then you've got and then Io is into you know jazz or whatever, bebop jazz, and he's got it all like I guess on some sort of MP3 radio thing or something, but. It's this clash of two kinds of music against like two different pilots, and
I noticed when I was looking through the extras, there's like commercials and promos and trailers and stuff, and they refer to his music as free jazz and that, which I don't think they use that term in the dub, but it's like I don't know if the music is really free jazz because it sounds to me like it's older than the free jazz period, and it's not quite as chaotic as free jazz. So I don't know if Japan was just trying to use an English term and kind of screwed up, and then the dub kind of removed it because they thought it was a little bit embarrassing. They just decided to just call it jazz.
I'm actually, I Googled different genres of jazz. So here's what we have. According to this website called musicgenrelist.com, we have acid jazz, avant-garde jazz, big band, Blue Note, contemporary jazz, cool jazz, crossover jazz, Dixieland jazz, etho jazz, fusion, hard pop, Latin jazz, mainstream jazz, ragtime, smooth jazz, and trad jazz. I thought there'd be like maybe a whole lot more to jazz, but maybe that's like covering it. And I guess
I don't know. I think like what is trad jazz?
Maybe, I don't know. And then you got Dixieland jazz, which is like...
That's like jazz that they play in the South.
Maybe it's like New Orleans jazz or something. I'm thinking hard bop might be bebop type.
Yeah, it is just a subgenre of bebop, which is what this sounded like to me. More than free jazz, which is kind of like atonal, just like crazy off the wall, like completely...
Let me say this. There's a bigger list on Wikipedia for a list of jazz genres. So
I'm sure there's
bebop is listed on Wikipedia, so that is a different type. So okay.
Yeah.
But I'm seeing like European free jazz, free improvisation, then there's free jazz, there's gypsy jazz, jazz funk, jazz fusion, jazz rap, jazz rock, Kansas City jazz. Huh. Neo bop
jazz fusion and jazz rock are the same thing, really.
Neo bop jazz. I feel like I'm reading like half of these names are on some sort of model kit for Gundam. Neo bop, and then you got new jazz, NU jazz, like the new Gundam. Ska jazz. Well, that's kind of just ska music, anyways.
Some names are pretty stupid, like. What is new jazz to distinguish it from old jazz? You know, just like what year does it start being new jazz?
The year is from the 1990s on is new jazz. Okay. And the definition style states music that blends jazz elements with other musical styles such as funk, soul, electronic dance, and free improvisation. I would not know what that is.
And it mentions funk, but there was already jazz funk on the list and jazz rock on the list, which it mentions. So it's like kind of redundant. A lot of the subgenres that Wikipedia has, but that's the way these things are. You know, it's that's like if you look Wikipedia at a list of genders is. Or something, you're going to see like five that are almost the same thing where it's like a girl with boy-like characteristics and then just phrase it slightly differently and have a slightly different name for it or something.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, those aren't really different things. They're just different people calling the same thing different things, or, you know.
Apparently there's something called Asian American jazz, too.
Jazz played by Asian Americans.
Yeah, or Asian American jazz combines standard jazz instruments with Asian instruments. So you got the taiko, the shimisen, iru, and suna. Or the you know, those instruments mixing with jazz music. I've actually never heard of that type. That's kind of interesting.
Well, I guess that would be like jazz played by Asians, or just, do you have to use Asian music, musical instruments in it as well? What if it's an Asian American just playing with American instruments or something?
I freaking don't know. It's... When it comes to Wikipedia, those lines are very blurred very fast.
Uh-huh.
Can't really think of anything else to say about... I mean, I guess there's, like, a few more things to say about Thunderbolt. I mean, like, it was...
I guess we could praise, like, the animation and the art style, I thought, were really nice to look at. And...
Yeah, it was... It's very crisp because it's all digital.
Yeah, and people were praising it because its mobile suits were not CGI.
Yeah, that's true. But I mean, I'm sure there was some 3D modeling to go into it. It just wasn't as apparent as like the mobile suit Gundam the Origin. But again, the stuff in the Origin and doesn't bother me at all.
No, I mean, I thought it was fine, but it is different to see how it looks here compared with the Origin.
Yeah.
I think this probably looks better than Origin, although I did like Origin as well.
Yeah, I mean, Origin has a great story and. I like the designs, even if it looks CGI looking. Yeah, there's nothing wrong with Origin. Just thinking, because I didn't really take. I mean, I didn't think about taking notes in Thunderbolt.
I didn't really write stuff down. It was kind of just like we watched it, and it doesn't have to be the whole focus of the episode anyway. So
yeah,
with other stuff.
Yeah, I guess it was kind of like interesting in how they had. Like the Zeon sniping unit, where I kind of called it the physically challenged Zeon unit. The handicap unit. I thought that was a pretty interesting aesthetic, where it's like the Zeon war effort was so determined to win that they're not going to send anybody home. No, they're going to, like, if you miss an arm or a leg, oh, we can fix that because we want you to keep fighting until you literally die. Death to us doesn't.
The Bots trailer, and Zeon was like, "Well, we can get in on this. Let's make our cripples into robots too."
I just wonder, like, if they're, you know, they're going to like the special needs home in like Side 3, and you know, they're asking these like mentally challenged children, like, "What do you think of war? Or, like, do you think the Federation's good?" And I'm like, "No." And then it's like, "You're grunt. Like, do you know how a gun works?" Or do you like robots? Robots are big. They make a lot of noises. All right, you're good enough to pilot.
Let's just stick Gatomat in a robot, see what happens.
Yeah. You'd be like, hey, I'm trying to like, you can't even say there's a Gundam coming. And then you just hear this explosion. What was he trying to say? I don't know. Oh no, there's a gun! Good job, Gatomat!
Well, why doesn't the beam saber always work? Why can't they just work?
Hey, I got a phone call.
Okay.
I just had to check the wattage and relay it
to
my dad.
Your house isn't about to be overloaded with electricity or something?
No, I think my dad wanted to check it compare it to another breaker in another apartment, so he's asking me.
Hmm.
But anyways, yeah, mentally challenged Zeon unit. I mean, I think we already made our Gatomat joke, so I'm good with that.
Yeah,
it was kind of, I guess it was just interesting in how, like, Daryl, like, you know, he's basically, like, he became that old sea dog fisherman from Family Guy with, like, peg legs and arms. And his only sole purpose is to basically pilot the Psychozaku, which is basically like sticking his metal nubs into those like portholes where like it's supposed to like move like, or the reflexes on operating the mobile suit is supposed to be like almost human-like. which is why his reflexes are so good, which I found that was kind of interesting, but like, you know, it's like, oh, we're going to make the mobile suit run, and I just see his little peg legs going like, nee, 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 and then I'm like, how is it running normal? I don't get this.
Yeah, I don't know if that was really the smartest thing to do, but I guess it worked.
Yeah. But, yeah, it's just interesting how, like, you know, they got the bad side of the Zeon, at least one part of it, I'd say, where, like, you know, they're taking these, you know, these pilots and trying to make them, you know, still combat worthy and ready in order to keep on fighting when they haven't really died yet, because they don't believe in the Purple Heart system at all. And then you've got, you know, the Federation that's basically recruiting, like, teenage boys and girls. Like, literally, like, kids probably under 15. That's like, if you're tall, it's like, basically, like, if you're tall enough to reach the pedals, you're tall enough to fight in this war. And even Io was just like, great, these kids are gonna all die. And and it was interesting, because, like, you know, none of them were, like, these cyber new types. They were just regular kids that were, like, we went through training. They tell us we're good enough to go out and battle, and then we get out there, and you got one Zaku that's trying to split them up in formation and just picking them off one by one. And then, like, you got the kids that are trying to, like, you know, like, remember our training, we've got to stay together and all this other stuff. And, you know, you basically send out, like, 50 of them, and then only, like, maybe 15 will come back, or 10. So, and that's, and kind of in real combat, that's how it is. I think it was, you know, I've heard stories where it was, like, you know, in World War II, you have, like, you know, units that try to take out one sniper. And you just have to keep sending wave of attackers to take out the one sniper. So basically, the math to that is, like, to every one defender or someone defending or a sniper, it takes 15 men to take it out. Because you have to, like, sacrifice yourself in order to get closer and closer to, in order to take out the enemy unit. So it's, yeah, it's war. And it sucks, but...
Do you know what are the, like, is there, like, an official casualty number of the one-year war, like, on the Gundam website or anything? Because
it
must be millions and millions.
It would have to be. I mean, maybe even close to a billion. Because, like, there was a person that, there was a guy on a website that had, like, a number statistic thing on how many men died in World War II. Like, it's combat soldiers on all sides. And he had, like,
a
chart.
Millions,
yeah, right? It's basically Russia had the most losses. I think it was like 700 million lives were lost total in World War II,
wow.
I believe. Most of that, I think 2/3 of that came from just the Russian side.
I'm going to see what it says about it on Wikipedia here.
No, there's a guy that had, like, an actual number website that it was like, hey, I'm breaking everything down. Here's how you can see it. And it's just astounding on, like, and compared to any other war we've been to, nothing is stacked up close to World War II.
It looks like it's, like, about 75 million on Wikipedia for World
War
II.
Okay, 75 million probably sounds roughly right.
But, I mean, there is always, like, especially when it comes to the communist countries,
yeah.
Like, you don't really know exactly what's going on there. Because as well as the people that Hitler killed in Russia, you have to keep in mind the people that Stalin's killing at that period, too, of just his own people. And so is
yeah.
that going to be counted the war deaths because it happened during the war? Because Stalin was also killing people when there wasn't a war, you know? So it's kind of hard to attribute what
yeah.
deaths are happening because of the war. Like, would Hitler have done the Holocaust if there was a war or if there wasn't a war? Because it happened during the war, and so it's grouped in with World War II. That it might have been something he would have done anyway, or maybe he wouldn't have been able to do it without the war going on to cover for him so that people were distracted.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you can get away with a lot more atrocities during a war, even if it's not directly related to the war.
Yeah.
Because you can use the war as an excuse to be doing that kind of thing. And some people will just accept it because they're like, a war is going on, we got to do whatever the leaders tell us to do.
Yeah. Well, also is the fact that it was probably acceptable because Russia was the ally, it was on the side that won the war.
Uh-huh. Yeah, because at that point, that Stalin was not, he was not under the same kind of scrutiny he was under when, like, Truman was president later on, or Eisenhower, because FDR was more, like, allied with Stalin to help him get territory in Eastern Europe and
yeah.
to help him fight against the Nazis and everything, so.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, that was the period where the New York Times was running pro-Stalin articles and saying, like, oh, Stalin isn't really starving the Ukrainians, and he doesn't really have gulags, and he's not really doing show trials, and they're kind of like the U.S. media was kind of like naive about what Russia was really doing back then, and it's kind of the opposite of what they're doing now, where they like hype everything up if Russia is involved, like where they try to make it seem like everything is like the Russians elected our president and everything, you know?
Yeah, there's no hiding of like war atrocities or crimes on like at least on our end during like us in the middle of a war conflict. I mean, like you've got the Chelsea Manning thing where he leaked documents of the videos of like how we treated civilians that were not involved. We thought they were, you know, our militants in the video that's on like Wikipedia. And yeah, it's bad, but like, you know, it wasn't being covered up for the greater good. It's like, you know, this is a bad thing we need to be aware about. So it's really totally open now compared to like how censored it was back in the during World War II.
Well, yeah, we have WikiLeaks now, and it's like there's so much stuff that's out there, yeah, with technology and everything, and so it's very hard to hide things because of social media, and there's all these human rights groups that are monitoring the situation in all these countries, and it's very different now compared to back then.
Yeah,
and plus there is so much more rural areas back then where like. Nobody is ever going to know how many people were killed by Mao in the Cultural Revolution or by Stalin in his purges or anything, because it's like a lot of these people are living in like primitive villages where their births and deaths are probably not being even recorded, and there's no like documentation for history of what is going on exactly, and so you only have like rough records of what's going on based on like news reporting, and a lot of it's probably being kept secret, and so I mean that's the way that the left can cover up the crimes of communism, is they'll just say like, oh well, we don't know that for sure, or you know, nobody is positive that Stalin deliberately killed a bunch of people, maybe they just starved because it was a poor country or something, even though communism always makes people starve.
Yeah, and all these numbers are just on guesstimations or just estimates, like there's really no factual numbers.
Yeah, and especially when it's Gundam, it never even happened, so you can't really have an accurate number.
you're only gonna have to say or something, or
comic says or whatever.
Yeah, I guess like that would be a very interesting thing to do, to try to like give an actual like death count in the world of Gundam. You have to take in like the civilians that died from colony drops. And you have to take all this information and estimate it the best you can based on just the events that happened in the 1 year war. And you have to take into account, like in space, the solar beam system, solar ray, excuse me. And then, cause you know, they say like, oh, a third of the Federation fleet was wiped out. Well, I mean, we don't have a number of like how many units would have been in each of those fleets or each of those units or whatever, so you have to kind of do the math on that, and then figure out what the Federation's fighting strength was after, and then going against Bawaku. It'd be a very interesting task, but you have to take like a very hardcore like Gundam nerd, and then also try to have a Gundam nerd that knows a lot about World War II statistics and numbers, and try to like add all that up somehow. But the thing is, like with these, like with Thunderbolt, like you're adding in. You know, the war is such a huge thing, so then there's, like, all these new units everywhere. So, like, there's... You know, when Tomino made this, it was just a show. But now there's, like, you know, I think it's so big enough that there's so much you can add in depth to it that you can add, you know, someone can come in and, you know, go to Bandai and be like, okay, you know, like, let's say, like, you know, Zeon had this many armies and this many people and, you know, this many battalions or whatever, and they kind of do the math on, like, what each member represents or makes up a battalion... to this naval fleet, or, you know, it's gonna be like, I would say everything coming together probably about a billion, or if not more.
I just found a website called factindex.com while Googling for this.
Yeah.
And they've got like a list of the well-known like incidents of the 1 year war and what the casualties are, and it doesn't have sources, so I don't know. But it says 2.8 billion people are killed during 1 day of fighting at the beginning of the 1 year war, during the battle in side one, side two, and side four because of the use of nuclear weapons. And then it says another 2.5 billion are killed in the colony drops, and another 500 million combatants are killed in action. So that's about 6 billion people just right there in the first month of the war. So that's just in January of 0079. So
well, yeah, well, here's
probably if that happens every year, every month for the whole year, then that's like 60 or 70 billion people, 75 billion people or something that died in the 1 year war.
Well, here's the thing, like, we don't know how big the population is during the 1 year war, whenever that may happen, because it says, like, you know, half the Earth's population died within the first week or the first month of the war, is what it's always claimed, but we don't know what the exact number, I mean, are we at 20 billion people or 25 billion people total, and, you know, you got half of that living in space, half of that living on Earth, I mean, yeah, it's, and, you know, we gotta figure out how many millions of people can fit in one colony. So, yeah, that's a huge task for someone that likes to do all those kinds of numbers that isn't me.
Yeah, and then there's the issue of the environment effects as well, where they, you know, they caused all this climate effects by dropping colonies and firing lasers and all this stuff, and so they're starting to make the Earth uninhabitable, and then Char wants to finish the job in Char's counterattack, because that's what Zeon's all about, is just trying to make the Earth uninhabitable for their crazy ideology.
I don't know what else to say about Thunderbolt. I mean, it's really good. And yeah, definitely check it out from Right Stuff. Buy the Blu-ray from them. After us going through, like, you know, hypothetical numeral numbers of the 1 year war losses, I'm just kind of like, all right, I'm kind of checked out right now.
Yeah, I guess.
I don't.
Do you hear the train again?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
I can't talk about the other Blu-rays we got. So I've got in the Attorney Gundam TV series on Blu-ray.
I haven't watched it yet, but I definitely want to.
Yeah, they have the second part has 3 Blu-ray discs. And each disc has one part of the 3-part interview with Sid Mead, who is the mechanical designer for Turne Gundam. And I watched the first one last night because I was just waiting for you to get on, that you never did.
Oh. Last night?
Yeah. I watched.
Yeah, I fell asleep.
Yeah, I watched part one of it last night, and it was really like him going in his backstory and how he got into design, and like he went to the Art Center, which is a big art school back in the 50s, and I think it's still that way today out in California. And basically, like, it was people from Right Stuff, I think, interviewing him and, like, where he got his, you know, how he got started in designing. He's really interesting. It was a really interesting interview from what I just saw. I'm probably going to finish it up probably this weekend.
How long is this interview?
They're about 25 minutes each, and it's broken up in 3 parts.
Yeah.
So you're talking about, like, maybe 90 minutes total. Roughly.
And is it on this one too? Or, I mean,
it's on, they got one part, the first part on disc one in the second collection, and then the second part on disc two, and the third part on disc three.
Okay. So that's at some point I'm going to need to watch Turn 8. I don't know why I've never done so. I mean, it took so long for it to even get released here.
Yeah.
And I downloaded some fan subs, but I never made it very far in it, but it's something I need to watch at some point.
I mean, that's kind of like, I mean, that interview is like the most interesting thing that I think of these, based on what we got from Right Stuff in this past year, like one of the best bonuses is just hearing an interview from Sid Mead, who's done so much design work. And like,
did they talk about designing for other shows too, besides Gundam?
Yeah, he talks about him working with other stuff. Like I feel like half of his stories involve him being somewhat intoxicated with other people. Because he's just like, yeah, I went to this place and like, we got drunk a lot. And he'll laugh about it. And then, like, there was, like, some story about him, like, riding with someone in Japan who had, like, one working Mercedes-Benz at the time in the 60s. And so, like, they had, like, you know, a bunch of drinks and cigars in the car. So they're smoking and drinking, driving down the road to go to some big palace party. And he's all dressed up with, like, all these 2 geishas on his arm. And he's just like, yeah, it was a fun time. That's all he really said.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm like, man, that dude's awesome.
That sounds a lot different than being, like, in the anime today. You know, everybody's always talking about, like, oh, it's so stressful, and they're all being overworked to death, and they got this crazy schedule.
Well, I mean, this is, like, before doing anime. Like, this is with him, like, with friends, and, like, he's got his own, like, this is him after college, like, when he was working, like, doing design stuff, like, independently, I think, but, when he had his own company when he started in the 70s.
Okay.
Somewhere in there, but he's just one of those guys that's just, like, I guess he just knows the right people to do all this, like, you know, fun stuff with.
Yeah.
So I'm really curious on what part, like, I guess he'll probably talk about part two. I know with part three interview was him talking about doing design work with Nishizaki and the Yamato series. And because he was credited on doing designs for that anime. So that to me, like, that sounds really interesting. Like, I'd love to hear the rest of that part. But yeah, that's definitely an interesting bonus put on these Blu-rays, I've got to say. I'm just kind of going through my stack here real quick. So, like, I'm looking at the Zeta Gundam movies. Alright, so it's got basically theatrical trailers and the GAC music video, which was to, I think it was like the second or third song or whatever that GAC sung for, like, one of the movies. That's really it for bonuses. And the Zeta Gundam new translation is basically, we probably talked about this in the, I know we talked about this in our Zeta Gundam review, how the footage was just really different, where they added, like, new and old animation to it. And even on the covers, like, it's the screen caps of it is all the new animation that they added to it. They're not even adding in the old stuff. Like, it all looks new.
They're gonna pretend that it's a new thing, but even though...
Yeah, even though, like, 70% of it is the old footage.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why those movies don't have a very good reputation. It's just it's such a weird mixture that they did, and they didn't really do a pretty good job on it.
No, it's interesting, and some people really like that those movies, but then, you know, people like me are like, it, just because of how wonky between the new and the old animation looks, it's just not, it's just like, oh, it's stupid. But if you want a different, if you want an alternative retelling of Zeta Gundam, if you love it so much, then, you know, there's the movie for you. So I'm picking up 8th MS Team. Let's see. This includes the OVA series, and they got Miller's Report movie. It also has the animation, the animated short, Battle in Three Dimensions. It's got promos, a special animation clip. I don't know if I checked that out or not, but Battle in Three Dimensions was the, like, the little animated short for the Blu-ray in Japan, where it was, like, them fighting on a bridge. And then fighting, like, two, flying Goth types. That one's actually, yeah, that's actually pretty interesting, just to add in there as a little, bit, they kind of tie in, like, and it's towards the end of them going towards the final battle in that city, it seems. Cause I think it was, Sanders, like, his mobile suit, like, his leg got blown up by, like, the Zaku tank or whatever. So it's Shiro and the EZ-8 fighting the Goth types. And then, like, in that one, like, Karen gets knocked out instantly. I don't know, she was, like, ahead, she had point, and so, like, something shot at her, and she got knocked out. So, like, it was, I guess for, if you're a feminist in the anime side, you can probably complain about how, like, oh, how dare they knock the woman out, she was very capable of fighting.
Well, but, like, Kari, I wouldn't care for this one, huh?
I guess not, but, I mean, for me, it was, like, I like Karen as a character. I mean, yeah, I mean, you know, it sucks that she wasn't there. It's hard for me to place exactly, like, when that happened, but, I mean, they still took out the two Goth types, so it was more about, like, Shiro and the EZ-8 fighting. Probably because they felt like her, she had the other working mobile suit in that unit, so then, you know, maybe they had to take her out in order for, like, okay, this is gonna focus on the EZ-8, no one's gonna steal the EZ-8's glory, no one's gonna steal Shiromata's glory. So, you know, it would be him fighting these two mobile suits and then having his team, like, basically scout it and tell where it's at. But other than that, it's a really good animated short. So that's really cool to check out. So I've got Gundam the Origin. We have reviewed Gundam the Origin. A lot of this contains promos. There's a music video with it. And then there's a preview for the upcoming Chronicle of the Loom Battlefield series, or the OVAs to that, which that comes, like, out later this year.
The next Origin episodes that are coming out?
Yeah, the next Origin episodes that come out, which is focused on the Battle of Loom, which I'm really excited to check out, yeah. This one has both the English and Japanese tracks on it for the dub, so...
Okay.
Next in my hand, I've got MS Igloo, which we finally got this out in America. And MS Igloo, we're supposed to get this out in like 2007, I believe, because I remember putting a promo or a not a promo.
Anti-visual, right? I was gonna put it out.
Yeah, and they never did. Like, I put in a pre-order for it at my local Suncoast at the mall, like when I live in Cary, and they never got it in. Like, no, I think it was. I don't think. Yeah, we never got this in officially released in the States. I don't know what happened, but now we do.
I think Anti-visual went out of business. They're so overpriced on all their stuff.
Yeah,
the bubble was starting to burst.
I think this was like right before they went out of business. So, but like obviously, like times were tough enough for them to, you know, they couldn't release MS Igloo at the time. Yeah,
going out of business at least.
Yeah, I mean, really, the only bonuses for this is just clean openings and clean closings to the MS Igloo stuff. So, but it's got all the episodes in it. So, you're good to go there. And then I've got Gundam 83, which I did watch like the first episode in HD, and it looks so good. This one, I think I talked about it in the last episode, where they had they made these animation shorts called the Mayfly in Space. So then they did a second one, because the first one came out during, I guess, like when the OVA was coming out. Which the first one is available on, or it was on that old Bandai DVD set, the complete collection. But with this Blu-ray, they've got the second one, so the second one came out for the Blu-ray in Japan. Yeah, that second one is just odd. It's like they did it, it seemed like they did it so on the cheap. I mean, like, it was mostly just still shot photos of them trying to look like something's animated and it's not. I mean, it's digitally done, and, you know, it's tying into, like, kind of how Shima, you know, really just, like, how she became the person she is because of the war and how, like, her comrades were treated. And, you know, she came this, like, this very vengeful, like, you know, harpy woman or whatever. And, yeah, it's, I remember watching it and I was like, I wanted to kind of, like, really dig it, but at the same time, it was just like, it's, you know, they animated a couple of things in there, but that was it. Everything else was just still shots. And try to, like, you know, move a story along to make it interesting. And it was, like, you know, compared to, like, what they did for, like, 8th MS Team, where they actually animated something. And, like, this one, I was just like, geez, it's done on such, on the cheap, it felt like. And I'm like, I guess this is still considered, you know, part of Seaman's backstory, but I just, like, it just wasn't that good, I don't think. But other than that, I really like Gundam 83. And they've got Japanese promos with it, too. So you can watch, like, I guess, how it was originally promoted, coming out on Laserdisc and VHS at the time.
Yeah.
And I'm actually capturing my 83 Adult Swim airings from, like, 2002 onto my computer that I'm going to put on that that sharing site that we've been getting our stuff from.
Yeah, good. That's some of the first stuff that aired on Adult Swim Action back when they had the Yu Hakusho and
yeah.
The Pilot Candidate.
Yeah, the lineup for that was, it was Yu Hakusho, Pilot Candidate, Outlaw Star, Tenchi Muyo, Cowboy Bebop. Yeah, because they have, like, when I'm watching these promos, like, during the commercial breaks in between the episodes, they have, like, the lineup before it goes back into playing Gundam again. And I was like, you know, I was like, crap, I didn't know that Outlaw Star was on Adult Swim or Tenchi Muyo. I totally forgot about that because it's been so long.
Yeah, they just aired, like, when they first started Adult Swim, I guess they weren't really prepared to have that many shows. So,
yeah.
So they kind of just aired a bunch of stuff that had been edited for Toonami. It's almost the shows for TVY7FB.
Yeah.
Including stuff that had never even aired on Toonami, like Pilot Candidate. But it was edited for Toonami, and then they decided at the last minute, let's put it on Adult Swim instead, and make an action block there instead.
Yeah.
And just air it with a bunch of kids' shows.
Yeah, I mean, I've been noticing, like, the edits in 83 when I'm watching it.
So really, what did they add out?
So far they've edited out someone giving the bird. That was on the fourth episode when they're fighting the Africa Corps Zeon units, And one of the pilots, like, went to go flip off a Zaku when he killed it. But it's just him having his fist in the air. But in the original version, it's him flipping him off, which makes perfect sense. But, like, it's these censorship things that it looks really well. Like, when they censored stuff, like, when they put, like, bikinis on women or, like... You know, there was one episode when, one of the pilots, like, in the second episode, died. That was one of the Federation pilots. And so Ko goes into his room to get his effects. And he's got, like, a naked woman picture on his wall. And so, like, what they did for censoring it was basically put, like, a one-piece bathing suit on her. And it looks well done. Like, you would think it's a real, like, they actually, like, that's, like, originally was in it. Because they even added, like, some shading to it and stuff. And that, and, like, you know, when think of that, and then also the TV airings for 8th MS team when, like, the orange-haired chick is coming out of the water or whatever, and she's naked, but in the TV version she has a very, like, small bikini on her, but it looks like a real bikini. And I'm just, like, back then it was like they took the effort to make, like, the censorship thing look as best as they could.
Yeah. I'm sure DeMarco would appreciate that.
Yeah. I mean, even with,
They did that on Tenchi Muyo as well, and also on Outlaw Star, pretty much everything they had back then, because they were airing it from an era where Japan was still including that kind of stuff in everything.
Yeah.
You know, they had to include digital bikinis and, like, how it bebop and all sorts of things. They had to add that too.
Yeah. No, what was it? It was, like, the censorship thing for, Dragon Ball Z during the Garlic Jr. Sokka, like when Krillin's with Meryl or whatever, and she had that really very exposed one piece bikini. But then, like, in that version, it's like they just put, like, yellow blobs to try to cover up most of her butt cheeks and and her back or whatever.
Oh, they chose to make the bikini longer or something on her.
Well, they made it, like, hide more of her body instead of just going, like, up her butt. You know, kind of thing, and yeah, I mean, I see that, and I'm just like, I'm kind of really looking intently, and I'm like, yeah, I can definitely tell, like, where it kind of starts and where it ends in some places, because then I'm comparing it to the original footage, and I'm like, oh, okay.
I think some of the edits, maybe I don't know how all that works, but you know, I think some of it is done by, like, William Street or Cartoon Network or something on some shows, and the brothers, I think they have Funimation do it for them, or. I don't know if it varies in quality compared to who exactly is doing the edits. Because that may have been Funimation, and the other stuff may have been done by Toonami and Adult Swim themselves.
I mean, I know Funimation did their own edits for, like, the original Dragon Ball to be on TV.
Right, because they put out edited tapes of the Toonami version. And also Wing had edited Toonami version tapes out. When they were releasing it.
Yeah, that's true, because then they would later release Gundam Wing as, like, uncut, you know, like, these are the uncut tapes, and they had the ones that were censored or whatever. But I think that was mostly... Yeah, that was mostly, like, language or whatever.
Yeah, because you had, like, the late-night version of Wing that they would air on the midnight run, which was where they would say, like, die, and then you would have, like, the version of Gundam Wing that aired on Toonami... Where they would say, like, destroy.
That
would be the kind of the difference between the two of them. Or, like, one would say damn and one would say darn or something. And Dragon Ball Z is even funnier because the uncut version is still full of, like, Vegeta saying, like, blast and curses and drat and that sort of thing. So they call it uncut, but, I mean, if you compare it to a modern dub for even, like, a kid's anime, like One Piece or whatever, that, you know, that's filled with swearing, and even the Yu Yu Hakusho, when that was airing on Adult Swim, you know, that was the filthiest dub that Funimation has
At that time, it was the filthiest dub. I was like, man, Yusuke can swear up like a sailor, and then they put it on, you know, Toonami, and it's just like, darn.
Yeah, because they only aired it on Adult Swim for, like, 20 episodes or something, and then they jumped it over to Toonami, and then it was more edited, but still a good show, even though it was edited.
Oh, yeah. I think we're done talking about Gundam stuff. I know coming, well, other than like, I think coming up is, I'm really excited because I emailed, so we got a new guy named Jake that's handling, our review stuff and reviewer things for, for Right Stuff. I got your address changed. That's been taken care of. So you're good there.
Okay, good.
I asked him about if they could send us the collector's edition for Gundam Wing, and I asked him like as a shot in the dark thing, and he's not too sure.
Okay.
I don't know if it's going to happen, but I told him that like he said he'll get back with us and see if it's possible. But other
that would
than
be
that,
nice if they did. But I
yeah, because I'm like I'm looking at the collector's edition, and I'm just like, ooh, I want that.
Yeah.
But if it doesn't happen, that's fine. I was kind of a shot in the dark thing, anyways. But he was really cool, like responding right. back and like, yeah, I'll see what I can do.
Yeah, I haven't gotten anything lately from them. I wasn't sure if that's because I was moving. I mean, have you gotten stuff lately from them? Or
the thing that I got recently was Revolutionary Girl Utena. I think it's the first Blu-ray collection.
And right, I don't think I've gotten that yet.
It might have been sent to your old location, so they might have to resend it again.
I don't know if they're gonna. The post office is gonna transfer it or something eventually. Maybe.
I'm hoping they
there's all the delays because of the stupid hurricane and stuff. You know?
Yeah. I mean, we'll just play it by ear. If you don't get it in the next package or shipment thing, I mean, hopefully I can put it in for Jake to see if they can resend you the first one.
It's no big deal. There's a million things that they've sent us that we haven't looked through.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, Utena is. I mean, I'm curious. I mean, it's a lesbian undertone show, or show with lesbian undertones. Yeah, that's what I've always heard. But
we'll
I mean,
see
I,
if that's true or not, because a lot of times they tend to exaggerate that stuff. But I mean,
yeah,
doesn't play that kind of thing as well. Sometimes.
Yeah, I think if we're gonna watch it, it's probably gonna be like, yeah, I guess it's more like we'll see and be like, yeah, I guess these two are lesbians, but it's like that wouldn't be like the main point. Like for me, it's just like, oh, it's just girls doing stuff. This ain't half bad. Or this is dumb. I don't know what to expect from Utena, but I'm willing to give it a shot.
Is it? It's like a Sailor Moon kind of thing, right?
Yeah, it's magical girl kind of. I just know there's a whole lot of people that like praise that show up and have been for like many years.
Yeah.
I mean, I have another Utena DVD that's from Software Sculptures that I've had for years, but I think it's like a movie or something that's sitting on my shelf. That we could review one day. But yeah, I mean, that's kind of like the newest thing. There's something else I got called Sound of the Sky. I don't know. It's got a bunch of girls on it, like in military uniforms. Might be interesting. I don't know. It's another short.
Romantica.
Oh. I have to figure out what to do with those. I just feel like giving them away. So.
Give them to CG.
You give your stuff to CG.
Yeah.
Well, then, do you want to know where you...
You can give yours to Ted Cruz.
No, Ted Cruz is into his women that look like his wife porn. I don't think they've made anime that looks like his wife yet.
We haven't seen it. There could be women. I doubt it, though. I mean, not going by those pictures on the box. It seemed like it was entirely a yaoi thing.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to give something to somebody that they ain't gonna thoroughly enjoy. So, I mean,
that's why
CG. I mean, the Ted Cruz definition: if his porn is liking women, then he's kind of going by God's design of like men liking women, even naked. So there ain't nothing wrong with that. Anyways, I think that's it for Gundam stuff.
Have you noticed that nobody ever really insinuates that Donald Trump is gay? Like, it seems like that's something that the left often does about politicians. Like, they tend to say, like, oh, I bet this or that politician is secretly gay. I don't know, maybe it's because Trump has had so many wives.
Yeah, you kind of look at Milena and you're like, he ain't gay. And he's got kids. And I'm like, he ain't gay.
Yeah. I mean, that doesn't stop them usually because they'll claim, like, everybody... You know, like Rick Santorum or whatever, they're like, oh, he's against gay marriage and he must be secretly gay.
Well, Ghost has this theory on, like, John Kasich being gay, and I'm like, I don't see it.
Because he had, like, a male roommate at one point. It was his evidence that he was gay. That was it. Like, that was...
Yeah, that's not a whole lot of... That's not hard evidence to me. I mean...
No.
I mean, better for him to, like, room with a guy than another woman and then cheating on his wife. I mean, yeah, that ain't right.
Yeah.
All right, man. Ready to get into Belladonna of Sadness?
Belladonna.
Yeah, so this aired on TCM, I think during Toonami again.
It aired
last time.
Yeah, so right? So I found out that it was airing Saturday, I think, yeah, it was the 10th, or that early in the morning on Sunday morning at like 2 a.m., so it was during Toonami's block. And
right, like during Naruto.
I don't know when the last time it aired, but I know the first time it aired was back in March, because we talked about it.
Yeah, Josh was the one who informed us about things
like yeah. That. So what I did is I was looking up like my box or whatever and seeing like what stuff was on, and I turned to TCM and I was like, oh, Bullet is airing. That's pretty cool. I haven't seen that movie in a while, so I recorded that. And then I was looking down the line, I'm like, huh, I wonder. And then I start looking and then I saw Belladonna of Sadness. And I was like, holy crap, they're airing this again. So then I recorded that. And then I finally got around to watching it like Monday. I watched most of it Monday until like my internet cut out real quick. Cause then like once the internet cuts out, like I can't, like, the recorded stuff is connected to like a server for WCTEL in my area. So like if the internet goes out, you can't really watch recorded stuff until the internet comes back on. So then I wound up finishing up the rest of Belladonna later that night. I gotta say, like, I wonder whoever was up watching it at that night, some old guy was like, this is the weirdest porno I've ever seen on TCM.
Yeah, they don't usually air much anime, so for them to air one, let alone one that's this strange, is really a culture shock for a lot of TCM viewers who are used to watching like old Hollywood movies.
I can imagine like an 80 or 5-year-old guy like, is this the kind of shit my grandson's into of the hentai? Is this one of them hentai stuff? I don't know what to think. it's a very interesting like art house kind of film. I think that's why TCM's like going to air it and be like, well, it's late, so we don't have to censor anything because it's 2 in the freaking morning. We don't expect a whole lot of people to be up at this hour.
Yeah, from what I can tell, they have some sort of block. On Saturday nights, called TCM Underground, where they have stuff like this.
Yeah.
So that was probably why they only air it during that time period. I guess Saturday night is like the time when you can get away with the most on television, going by what Toonami can get away with these days with TV and everything. I guess that's probably, they figure people are asleep or out drinking. Or something.
Randomly, the person that gets home drunk and happens to turn on Turner Classic Movies is going to see this at 2 in the morning and be going like, what the fuck is going on? Why are there flying penises? Why is that guy's penis a giant giraffe coming out of his crotch? I gotta say, like, this was, I mean, it's kind of like neat that I saw it in a certain way. But at the same time, like, it's not something I'm going to heavily recommend anime fans to watch.
Right.
But, yeah, like, it's more of the, like, an art house thing. Like, you know, if you want to be cool, trendy, hipster person and be like, yeah, I've seen some edgy art house stuff, like Belladonna of Sadness. You ever see that?
If you really like Angel's Egg or something, you know, maybe you'll like this.
If you want to watch people having sex, Angel's Egg style art form, this is the anime for you.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it's the most non-looking anime thing, but it is considered anime because it is done by Japanese staff and creators and the director and the voice actors, so it does come from Japan, so we can count it as anime.
Yeah, it's kind of one of the early 70s X-rated cartoons.
Yeah, I know.
Like,
I know
the cat, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I know it came out over here because I know like Cleopatra, Queen of Sex, was over here because that's another Tezuka, or Tezuka's studio like adult movie that came out that they were like they put on theaters in America like in the late 60s, early 70s. Because there was that whole thing of sexual revolution, so like, you know, if you can air, you know, sexploitation stuff at a grindhouse theater or a movie drive-in, then like this would be the kind of the thing that they would put out, or you know, any theater that would be willing to air it and not feel any kind of moral social repercussions from the community or whatever that didn't care. But yeah, like Belladonna's, it was interesting. Like it was mostly just there was some animation to it, kind of just acid trippy kind of stuff, very 60s, 70s kind of, you know, just do whatever you feel like, your mind opening up kind of animation style art form kind of thing. Like, no, nothing's bound it, you know, just kind of go with whatever and animate that. But I mean, it does have
not really very much of a plot because most of it is just sex scenes.
Well, there is a plot. Stuff. There is a story. Basically, it's about Gene and Janae are a couple, and they live in this, like, you know, European, I mean, it's based off, like, a French book called, like, I think it was, like, Witchcraft or whatever, something, and it's kind of like they sort of adapted it to this movie, but I'd say it's probably very loosely adapted, but it's basically, like, involving this couple that's under this tyrannical king. And within the first 5 minutes, it has the main girl being raped by the king. And it has imagery of her being cut, like literally split up the middle. And
like
then, yeah, and then they have the phallic, her being raped by like this oval looking object, or her body becoming more oval, going in and out of her vaginal region. So she obviously gets raped, she goes home. And then she gets enticed by this little demonic character, which more phallic imagery happens, where she starts, like, jerking him off or whatever. And then he starts getting very personal with her. And basically, it's this demon that's like, you know, I'm only this small because this is how small you want me to be. If you want to be, like, you know, the person you want and have all this power, then, like, you know, help grow me with what you desire. So the more the demon grows, the more, like, wicked and I guess unpure and unhonest this woman, Janae, becomes. You know, it gets to the point where she's, you know, trying to make ends meet for her husband's a farmer, but he's just, like, you know, very exhausted from all the work he does. So he can't be there to really give her pleasure, but this little demon guy can. And the more the demon gives her pleasure, the more she, like, becomes this, like, wicked, vile woman, like, in the town. Like, at the point where she, you know, has her own spindle business and she's doing all this to help support her husband, too. So she's doing all this, like, she's spindling, like, to make clothes in order for them to finance the king's high taxes, because they're the only ones that can be able to afford it. And it's basically kind of like it's her selling her soul out to the devil, essentially, and her body. But then at the point, it gets to the part where, you know, she becomes like this, I guess it's like more like a tax collector in the town, sort of, or like a person that's, it's not really a tax collector, but it's kind of something like that. And she dresses in green to show that her, like, she has all this wealth and she's how powerful she is, even rivaling the queen of the town. And then eventually gets to the point where they cast her out of the town. And then she goes, like, wanders in the wilderness or whatever. And then that's when the demon is so huge and completely, like, turns her into this, succubus, like, witch in a way. And so then she comes back to the town. They have this giant orgy. And, she helps people for what they really want, which is, you know, mostly sexual stuff.
Yes.
Yeah. And it kind of goes into this thing at the end where she does get burned at the stake, and at this point, like, her husband has kind of sort of completely rejected her. But he hasn't really rejected her entirely, because he still cares for her, because even when she was being walked up to the stake, and she was looking at him for help, and he just wasn't going to do it. But it was at the moment where, like, she was about to be burned is when he stepped out there to try to do something about it, and he gets, like, stabbed by, like, 20 spears. Because he still cared for her in the very end, and then, she, of course, she gets burned at the stake. I mean, this all happens, actually, because of, it's the gesture of the kingdom that approaches her, that he wishes to, because she's able to grant wishes at this point, during this whole, like, sex orgy thing that's happening in town, where he wants to have sex with the queen. So then he grants the desire for the queen's desire to have sex with the jester, but of course they have sex, and then there's a giant spear in the back because the queen, or because the king, quote, killed them both. And so then the king knows that who's behind us, and then that's when he takes Janae out to be burned at the stake. But this is supposed to, I like how, but at the end of it, it all ties into, like, how the French Revolution happened, which is interesting. So then it has, like, all these French Renaissance art period pieces, or Impressionism, where it's, you know, the storming of the Bastille art piece, and then Liberty leading the people, where this all ties into, like, the revolution of, like, this oppression against the king or whatever. So it's kind of like this immoral thing, but then all this immorality happened to lead into, like, the three revolutions that happened within a 100-year period in France, which was interesting.
Yeah,
and that's essentially the movie.
For there to try to connect,
do what?
Then just, I wasn't sure exactly what the connection was there, than just that they both involved people, like, going crazy and doing whatever they want, and a lot of violence and sex, I guess.
Oh, I mean, I guess this is during a period of, like, there's this whole, like, the 60s was about sexual revolution, and, like, you know, like, there was all this, like, you know, for years, this oppression, like, you know, how sexuality is, you know, bad or immoral if it's outside of marriage or whatever. And so then we get into the sexual revolution where it's like, you know, like, we can do whatever we want to, and it, you know, it pleases us and it makes us happy, kind of thing. And I think that was, like, and that was kind of very, you know, inspiring, I guess, to the people that worked on making this, because I guess that part of it was coming over to Japan, or at least Japan was knowing about it at that time, so they can kind of, like, throw in those elements into this film. And I think that's probably why it would appeal, or was able to make it over to American theaters, because it was, like, kind of like all this art, that was kind of like what the sexual revolution was happening was during the 60s, and then, like, a piece like this would have fit very well with that.
Yeah, because there were other ones that were similar to this that were coming out from Ralph Bakshi.
Yeah.
And he had, you know, also very sexual cartoons, and also the rotoscoping. Didn't you think that some of the animation of this was done via rotoscoping, like Bakshi was doing on things like Wizards and Lord of the Rings, to make these characters look more human?
Yeah, because there were some scenes in this, and I was like, wow, I mean, it felt very rotoscoped, and I'm pretty sure some of this was. Because there was, like, there's some really nice, like, ways of how, like, movement was animated in this. And just, like, cutting, like, how textures and color and, like, visually, there's a lot of interesting stuff in Belladonna of Sadness to just, like, look at it aesthetically if you're, like, an art student or whatever.
Yeah, even if you don't care much for the plot or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, it is interesting to see something like this, because it is very stylistically different than anything else you're going to see that's associated with Tezuka. And I know he was not, like, according to Wikipedia, he was not involved with the whole project, or he left at some point. I don't know if he thought that it went too far, or if he just had other projects to do, like Astro Boy or something, or whatever.
It might have been other projects at the time, because the man was a workaholic. So he's just like, yeah, I have my director tied to it, so we're good to go. I'm going to go work on this other stuff, or more Tetsuo Adam, or whatever that he was doing at the time, or another manga.
Yeah, it's just, to me, one of the interesting things about this is that it is by somebody who created such a, like, all these beloved kids manga and stuff, and that somebody who was involved with that was also creating these adult films. It's, to me, it's interesting because it's so radically different than, you know, Astro Boy or any of the other stuff that he did at the time that was much more kid-friendly. Yeah. I mean, there was not really adult animation before this in Japan. But, I mean, there was like the two other films he had made before this, but like, it right. seems like if you look at 60s animation from Japan is mostly aimed at kids, not at adults.
Yeah, and I mean, anime was a brand new thing in the start of the 60s when they would, you know, it's coming, you know, they just started making live action shows. I mean, they had like the live action, Tetsujin 28 show. And, so then they're like adapting that to an animated show for kids. And then they got like, I know they did a live action Astro Boy before the animated Astro Boy. So like all that stuff was very simple animation. And, but like with this one, it was just kind of like there was more to it because it was a bigger budget. So it was kind of like more freedom to express all this.
And at first it seems like it doesn't have a big budget because you have like scenes at the start where there's a, is it just black and white and it's just like still for a while?
Yeah.
There are points when it's really slow, but then it becomes more fluid over time. And you can tell that it's actually intentional, kind of the minimalist strategy that they're going for there, I think.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
I'd say you're pretty right on. I would agree with that. I mean, it's very minimalist, but like the minimalist stuff and how they like drew the characters and like the how the characters look, especially Janae, where she just looks, you know, this like this beautiful woman all the time, even in no matter like what she's going through, and it's just like really just interesting in how. Like how she looks and how like some of the characters look. Like, you know, they're secondary characters because there's not a lot of detail to them. But the main character has all the detail to her, which is why she looks so beautiful, even though she's going through all this horrendous stuff that she basically put on herself to try to get out of a bad situation, which only makes it worse. Yeah, other than that, I mean, that's kind of the gist of Belladonna of Sadness. I mean, I guess we can, I know like the director, because I was looking this up the other day. Oh, let me see here. Yeah, there's my Google search. Because the director of Belladonna worked on different stuff, too. So director,
did they do, like, a Cleopatra's and Queen of Sex or something?
I'm looking it up now. So director, it was directed by Ichi Yamato. Ichi Yamato was a director and writer for the Astro Boy anime, Kim of the White Lion. He was the director for 1001 Arabian Nights, which is one of the same style.
The other,
yeah, that's the other adult-style movie that... that was done by Tezuka Productions.
Have you seen that or Cleopatra?
No, I haven't seen that or Cleopatra yet. But he did direct Cleopatra.
It would be nice if they aired those on CCM too, but I don't
yeah.
know anything.
So, Belladonna actually came out in 73, whereas 1001 Arabian Nights was 69 and Cleopatra was 1970. And then, so then after Belladonna was... he did another kids one called Wansa-kun, which is about a puppy. Spends the rest of his time. It's basically about a puppy looking for his mother, so it's very Tezuka looking. And then after that, he was a supervising director and writer for Space Battleship Yamato, and did the screenplay for the Yamato movie in 77.
Nice.
He also did screenplay and was a director for Odin, Photon, Sailor, Starlight, which.
Oh.
Yeah, Odin is that movie that's like the concept was produced by Nishizaki of Yamato. That was one of his things that he wanted to turn into this long series. And Odin is such a boring, boring movie. Despite having a heavy metal soundtrack by the metal band Loudness. So.
Have you seen it? Or?
Oh, I've seen it. I've seen the shortened Odin version that CPM put out.
I think that's the only version I've seen.
Yeah, and then also the 100. I've seen the 2-hour and 30-minute version that the full thing, which all of it is you see it and you just want to fall asleep because it's a sleep aid and you remember hardly nothing about it once it ends.
I remember it was vaguely Yamato like, but it had that metal soundtrack, which is the main thing that's memorable about it.
Yeah,
maybe that could have gone somewhere if it was a TV show and they had that time to. Develop it properly or whatever, but it's like so long already that I don't know how much more time they're really needed to make it work.
Yeah, that's something. But yeah, so that's kind of the stuff he's credited for on according to Wikipedia. Anime News Network is probably he's done a little bit more on through Anime News Network, but they kind of point out the main stuff that he did. on Wikipedia. He apparently was he did screenplay for Yamato 2520, which I heard wasn't that good. He did supervision for
Just like the OVA from later on.
Yeah, that was the one in the 90s. He did supervision on Legend of the Overfiend. So this guy is about adult content for sure.
Or at Tsukidoji, yeah.
Yes. I'm just looking at other stuff. Oh, he directed Pelican Road Culture Club. I've heard of this. That's interesting. I know of Pelican Road. I've heard of it, but I haven't seen it yet. Yeah. When did Pelican Road come out? Oh, it came out in 86. That's one of those 80s OVA movies that they just kind of like, you can do whatever you want to. That's the way I understood it. So, it's got a Portuguese dub to it. That's interesting. I might actually have Pelican Road on my hard drive. I just don't know. But no, that's...
Does it have an English dub or only Portuguese?
It's only Portuguese, yeah. I don't know if it might be... You can probably get it on Baka BT if you're a member of that website, because they're not letting anybody join that site, which is sad. I mean, like, people crapped on...
It's gone.
No, it's still up, but you have to have, like, a login thing to get into it, kind of like a MySplane. But, like... With Baka BT, as much people trashed it, and as much as they accept stuff on there, at least it was a decent place to get things. I know with like Naya, it's like they're trying to rebuild their catalog again, or whoever's running it now, and that's going to take some time.
Mm-hmm.
But Pelican Road might be on YouTube for all I know that someone uploaded. So
probably,
yeah. But other than that, that's kind of all I wanted to add for Belladonna. That's pretty much it. Okay. I mean, yeah, that's very simple.
Yeah, I think we covered that and Gundam pretty well.
Yeah. So what do we got for closing remarks?
I don't know. I guess we should do a little bit of update on Christian. I think we've mentioned the fact that he now has supposedly a girlfriend.
I have to say, based on how she looks, she seems like she keeps herself very groomed. She's got nice eyebrows. Some people think she's probably a dyke or whatever. I don't really know. Yeah, if a guy that had a sex change or a guy trying to be look like a girl, I mean, that would be
amusing.
Yeah, because then Chris is about someone that's a lesbian. But he hates men, so it would have to be true to be a girl. But it's so far fetched.
If it does turn out to be that way. I don't even think it's a person. I think it's probably just somebody using pictures of somebody else or something. You know.
But that is such. But people are like really skeptical. Like if it's a real like person that's trolling Chris. Like if this is a genuine person. But that person looks like the type of person that is very controlling, or would be controlling of Chris's life.
Yeah, because they have made comments like where they are on his page, and they're like, "How could you?" They're like getting jealous of like him commenting on like some My Little Pony actress's Facebook page or something. Like, how could you talk to that woman? You're supposed to only talk to me or something.
Well, it was more like, "Hey, don't forget." No, it was like comments like, "Don't forget, you're mine." Like that's very like. Uh-huh, alpha creepy. Female controlling, yeah. I would say it's definitely a girl, but it's a very controlling woman. And there are some of them out there that like to have that control over a man.
I don't doubt it. Yeah.
I think she's definitely a dominatrix type person, based on how she's acting. And I don't know. It's interesting in how like this relationship formed. So it's kind of interesting to see where it's going to go, but it makes the Christian saga very more interesting each and every day.
Yeah, we'll see how that all turns out, but I think for now it's just going to be interesting to see how he tries to tie it into Sonichu and try to like he tried to explain like some character that had appeared previously with some other name was secretly his girlfriend or something, and then ends up claiming that he'd known her for years. And apparently, day before on Facebook, he had been posting about how he needed a sweetheart, so I find it a bit weird that he's acting like they've been together for a long time, when he was posting about how lonely he was the day before he posted about how he now has a girlfriend. So it's like, who's going to believe him when he claims they've been together for years secretly or something? Like, that's just stupid.
Yeah.
He's not somebody who would keep a secret for years.
No, because then he'll put it in his comment.
He doesn't have to keep his mouth shut.
Yeah. It'd be interesting in how Barb handles her, too. Probably Barb is so out of it. I mean, like, she doesn't know what's going on.
Yeah. That's probably true. I know she is very skeptical of all the other ones that he's had as far as girlfriends, because so many of them have turned out to be trolls.
Yeah.
Like, the last one that actually went to their house, she seemed sort of like she didn't trust them, but...
Oh, was that the one he was, they had the phone conversation at, like, an O'Charlie's or Applebee's or whatever?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And they brought their cousin for some reason.
Yeah, because he was there they put on, like, this great act of, like, yeah, he's my cousin or whatever, and they were, like, just getting him to just say stuff at the table. Yeah, I remember that.
That was actually a fairly good troll, and I don't know if this is going to be as good. Because it seems like on the Kiwi Farms, they usually would know exactly what's going on and who's behind it and stuff. Like when mm-hmm. Catherine and Jackie were dating Chris, I'm pretty sure that the leadership there was in on that. But in this case, I don't know that they are behind this in this case, or if this is just some troll acting independently from like the main Chris trolls, like, I don't know, but one thing I'm pretty sure of is that this person is not actually attracted to Chris, and that he's going to get his heart broken again at the end of this, and probably it's going to lead to another hiatus on Sonic 2 comic or something.
Probably.
When he becomes depressed. I mean, there's a period when Chris was not uploading any videos for a few years.
Yeah.
Shortly after his father died, and, I don't know if he's going to become depressed enough that he'll go back to that degree of isolation. But anything is possible, you know.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see.
my assumption is just always when it comes to Chris is just this won't end well. It's just a safe assumption, I think.
That's like the go-to safe assumption of like this isn't going to end well. There's no hope for this guy at all. So, I know it's doom and gloom, and it's like
sometimes it's just accurate.
Yeah, I think it's just a constant train wreck. Uh-huh. And, you know, it's kind of like you want it to, like, I kind of want it to end for him, but at the same time, it's like he has to want that himself, and he keeps putting himself in these situations thinking it's going to get better this time, and it just never does.
Mm-hmm. He thinks that he's going to be able to just get a girlfriend, and it's going to be a normal person, and it's all going to work out. I mean,
yeah,
the amount of times this happened now with him, and it's like, why is he still taking them online? And you know, they're claiming like, oh, it's going to be an in-person girlfriend is what Chris claimed in his videos. But as far as I can tell, it's just somebody who Facebook friended him. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know that that's something that he can even, ever meet up with, you know, because they claim they live in Virginia, but it could just be somebody is lying about where they live or something.
I thought she lived in North Carolina.
Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, I think I might be familiar with that county, but I know it feels like it's probably it's Orange County, North Carolina. So I would think that's probably in the mountain region somewhere.
I just pulled up the quickie, and they got a tweet from Chris who says, "To all who still ask, Jess is a real and genuine person, and she and I have plans in the making. Please respect her and I." # Do not harass, and then like some sort of emoji of a flower. So that's what he says, but who knows?
Yeah.
And then there's something about planned podcast interviews, another one of the threads here. I don't know if that ever actually happened, but there was some funny stuff in the previous time he got interviewed. There was like somebody.
Was that the one about the
British or something?
Yeah, the game pitch thing.
turned to do, like, make Sonic 2 into a multimedia franchise or something.
Yeah.
And they kept asking him all these unrelated questions that only a troll would really be interested in. And they're like, oh, well, we just Googled you because we don't want to get in trouble for, like, making a cartoon from a horrible person or something. So can you tell us about, is it true that you abused your pets and that you killed your girlfriends and, like, you know, like a bunch of crazy, like...
Yeah, there was a lot, it was a lot of stuff. It was like, well, we want to be in the know exactly, like, what's going on, Chris? Like, we've heard some, like, very questionable things and we want to... you know, ask you some questions on that. So, okay, we want you to expel on a few things for us. Before we go further on this deal that never happened.
I don't know if Chris ever even realized that it was not a real person.
Yeah, he never
taken a while to make it.
Yeah, he never brought it up. Like, he never went like, I don't think they're ever coming back to me or I haven't heard from them in a while. Because after that, like, nothing has ever been said about it.
Yeah. He probably just forgot.
Probably.
I mean, he used to be, like, really, I don't know, I think he used to be really more deluded about the fact that Sonic 2 was going to go somewhere in his mind, where he was, like, convinced that this was something that was real, that Sonic 2 was going to get made into a game and stuff.
Yeah.
And nowadays, I don't know, I think maybe he's consigned to the fact that, resigned to the fact that he's just gonna make these, like, childish comic books on the internet and sell them to suckers and that's all that he's gonna do. Or maybe he still has those kinds of plans, but it seems like he doesn't make as many posts about, like, oh, I'm in contact with Sega and they're just on the verge of approving it. You know, maybe because he was so vocally against, like, the Blue Arms and it was always, like, destroying Sega's property and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Maybe he's not... He doesn't even like Sega anymore. I don't know. Okay, well, I guess that's enough for Chris Chan. He gets more time than he deserves, really.
Yeah, I mean, they still make Sonic Boom stuff. I still see Sonic Boom at, like, Toys R Us, so... He hasn't said anything... He hasn't gotten any vengeful thing on Sonic Boom as of late.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sitting in a new office chair that I built yesterday because I realized, like, what time it was and I was like, I had to be somewhere, but I had time to spend 30 minutes building a new office chair. And so this thing fits so well. And it feels so much better than my last one.
Well, that's good.
And that's kind of the important thing for me there. Oh, in terms of Gundam, I've actually joined, well, they get, in terms of me being part of meeting new people and getting out there after my breakup with Dory, I've gotten into a Gundam model kit club that meets up at this comic book shop in Greenville, like second Sunday of every month. And so now I've been getting back into building Gunpla again, which has been pretty nice. So, yeah, because, like, this comic book shop has, like, a bunch of stuff. They get it all in from Bluefin, which was VQ's old job that he apparently, like, he still hates them and is still very bitter, but Bluefin's kind of the only...
made him so mad that he, like, hates anime and Gundam and models and, like, everything.
Yeah, then he gets on to me about, like, you need to do something better with your life in this anime stuff because it didn't work out for me. And I'm like, I feel fine where I'm at. I'm actually pretty content with my life, more so than you. Get off my freaking back.
Right, he's acting like he's gonna become happy by, like, forsaking anime or something like
life. He's so hypocritical, which shouldn't surprise either one of us, because I remember I would, like, I did Twitch streams. I mean, I still do them once in a while, but not so often. And he was saying how, like, I'm a prima donna, I'm, you know, like, getting on to me about, like, wanting to stream stuff on Twitch. And now he's starting to do that.
Oh, does he actually do it? Yes. I thought he said he was going to.
No, I subscribe to him on Twitch, so then I get all these player unknown battleground game things. I mean, like, it's great that he's doing that, but it's just so funny how, like, you know, beginning of the year he was just, like, on my case, like, oh, look at Dustin, like, you know, look at Zionic, he's trying to be, like, a whore for attention, like all these other, like, cam whore Twitch people. And now he's doing the exact same thing months later, probably because he realizes, like, I need to meet, maybe this isn't such a bad thing, maybe I can go out and I do something constructive with my time. I mean, I thought he was part of a D&D group. I don't know. Yeah, he's now like
video games are the only thing he's really into anymore because he tends to trash like everything else.
Yeah, to me, like, I don't see how video game fandom and video game culture is any different from anime culture. They've all got their weird.
Better?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Like,
I
we don't.
Worse.
We don't have an anime gate. Not yet.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, nothing like that has happened, and it seems like the gaming world is so just like its own different kind of spew of poison compared to like anime fan. It's you either one is a poison. It's just which one do you, are you going to be more immune to? And anime fandom has been my immunity for longer than like. I mean, I like gaming too. I mean, I like my arcade machine, my Initial D arcade machine that I'm fixing and building up on, and. But I mean, it's just kind of like. You know, you're into whatever you're into, and, like, you know, there's no shame in that. But and for him, it's just kind of like, he thinks that, like, oh, you know, like, if you get out of anime, your life is going to be so much better. It's like, that's just a hobby of mine. It doesn't change anything. My life is, like, I've had a pretty good few weeks, actually. So, but, like, you know, being with other people building Gundam models and talking Gundam with them is, like, there's a lot of joy in that because you're around guys and you're talking about stuff. So, like, and I'm with a pretty good group. Like, we're pretty fun. So, like, I'm starting to get to know them. And you just bring a model kit and start building and just chew the fat or whatever. There was a guy that bought a perfect grade, I think someone bought a perfect grade kit, like, the first time I was there last month. And then this time someone bought they had an order in for a perfect grade, Gundam. And one of the nerds that was there spent $150 for it to get it and started building it there. And I've never seen like the inside of it or like the manuals, and I was like looking through it, and it's so detailed. Like the manual for the Perfect Grade Gundam had like 3D diorama graphics of like the Gundam head and how like what viewpoint or what degree, like how it views out of the camera, like what angle it's at, and like, oh, here's. You know, between this angle and this angle, it's got an 80-mile radius or whatever, 80-kilometer radius. And just all this, like, really nerd detail stuff to it. And, like, all this mechanical stuff. Like, I was, like, just amazed at how, like, wow. Like, they put a lot of effort into this, like, for a perfect grade kit. I mean, there's two books of it, John. Between one is, like, a technical manual, and the other one's actually how to build a freaking model kit. And it's, like, you have to put in, like, I've only seen the head unit for this thing, because that's what the guy started with first. You have to put in, like, LED lights for the lights, like, individually, and then you have to hook up a wiring system inside of it to get the lights to work.
Jeez. Elaborate thing, huh?
Yeah, but for me, it's, like, the next step above Master Grade for me is to build a perfect grade kit, but it's just, like, I can't justify paying that much for a perfect grade. I mean, unless there's a kit that I absolutely want to build, and I'm not entirely there yet. I mean, there's a couple I would like, but like, I don't want to build it and like, don't like it after like a couple years. Like, I want to be proud that I built this perfect grade kit. So for me, like, getting back into Gunpla, it's just like, I'm building things that I really, really want to build. So, like, right now I'm building, like, the Gundam, the Origin Gundam prototype that's in the manga. Like, they made a Master Grade kit for that. And for me, like, having that kit is, like, that's the only, Gundam that I'm happy to build. And I'll be satisfied just building that. Just because of how, like, unique it looks. But no, when I was there, I bought the Onivo Gato's Gelgoog, and I've got that sitting on my floor. So that's, like, the next kit I can work on building. And... Yeah, so it's just kind of like building whatever you really enjoy or really like. So that's kind of like keeping my time preoccupied there. But yeah, it's I wouldn't mind doing like a Gunpla. I know there's like a few podcasts out there that talk about Gunpla, and maybe we should do one eventually. But I don't think you've ever built a model kit in your life.
Yeah, I have a few wing ones or something that I built as a kid, but yeah, I generally don't know very much on the model kits, but...
Yeah, but that's not your thing, though. You're more like the toy collector.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's just something I've never gotten into, because it's like, you can buy something that's already been assembled, or you can buy something that's not been assembled and assemble it yourself.
Yeah.
I guess with the assembling it yourself, you get more use out of it in a way, so, I mean, maybe it does have some sort of...
Yeah, it's
appeal of like different from buying toys that are already, you know, pre-made.
Yeah, there's sort of like a self-ownership and self-satisfaction to like, hey, you know, this figure that's sitting here, I built that. It came in pieces and I put it together. I put my time into it. There's like this gratification of like from start to finish completion. So that's why it makes it so unique to you. And a lot of the kits that I have, like this stuff that I've built that, you know, some of them I've sold and some of them I'm still keeping around because it's like, you know, I remember putting all the effort into making it. And, you know, now it's like, you know, I kind of want to keep it because, like, I own it. Like, I built it. I made that thing. It's mine. And it's great. And there's always maybe, like, a history behind it or a story behind it or whatever. Like, you know, like, the kits I'm building with a group, it's like, hey, you know, I built this, like, when we're having this conversation with this person about this certain show or something that's going on in his life or whatever. So it kind of has this personal aspect to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a nice hobby to get back into. Like, for me, it's just kind of like I'm taking my time with it. You know, now that I'm with a group of guys, it's kind of like it's better when you're building stuff together because then you feel like you have an initiative to get it, like a drive to get it done. Because if you do it by yourself, like, you know, there's no purpose of sticking with it. I think that's why I've been keeping up with the shows on Toonami because then, like, you know, I have the incentive, like, oh, this is only going to be on this week and I don't feel like watching it online because I feel like that's too much freedom to do that. But I like keeping up with once a week thing because I feel like this drive, like I have to watch it then. And then it's also great when we can like have a discussion while we're watching our show like online too. Because then we're having like one to one. We're having
talk back.
Yeah, we're having like this one to one conversation interaction while the show is airing and getting our thoughts and inputs out on it.
Yeah.
So that's kind of why I stick with like Toonami, I think. That's probably maybe the main reasons. But
yeah, it is a better experience in a lot of ways compared with watching online because you don't have to deal with buffering or internet connection or whatever. Although it seems like your TV is somehow connected to your internet or something because it cut off during Build on a Silence because the internet went out or something.
Yeah, it's hooked up to like a server through the internet company we're getting this stuff from. So, I don't know, something else to add to that.
I was watching it on the TCM.
You're watching it on the website?
The website, yeah, because it's like it stays on there for 2 weeks or something after you've already, after it's already aired.
I didn't know that.
There and it was kind of buffering and everything, and I was having problems with that.
Oh.
Even though my connection is generally fast here, but I guess it still goes out and gets slow from time to time, like it probably does every connection.
I can't think of anything else I wanted to talk about.
Yeah, I think we've probably covered enough ground here.
Yeah, I already mentioned the Hurricane Irma coming through, which really wasn't that bad Monday. And I haven't been to school in a week because I only go like Tuesdays and Thursdays.
They canceled it
yesterday because I guess there was enough power outages and stuff on the ground that they're still cleaning up that like, oh, we don't want to risk student safety or whatever. And some of the areas are out of power. So we're just going to close down school for another day. And it's just kind of like, one of my quizzes that I had to take yesterday has been pushed to tomorrow. So I got to get around to reading more content and studying for that now. So that's kind of that's on my to-do list today. But yeah, other than that, just thinking. Yeah, it's been like, I feel like I've had this like mini vacation at the beginning of the school year. It's like, I mean, like I already get like a 4-day weekend essentially because I don't have to go to school Friday or Monday. So I just kind of have like.
What about that other hurricane with the J name that's coming up? Or something?
Oh, Jose?
Jose, yeah.
I think Jose's staying in the ocean. I don't think they're like looking at the diagram thing and it's like just kind of doing a big loop in the middle of the ocean. So it's not going anywhere, which is a good thing. I mean, if anything,
with Florida, every time that they have one, it's like it gets hyped up. It's going to be the biggest one ever. And then it isn't as bad as they say.
Well, I mean, they're saying Key West is like again destroyed. So that looks pretty bad there because it hit on directly. And, And it basically went on, like, the western side of Florida, so now it's kind of dissipating in Tennessee by now.
It's already all the way up there?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh.
I mean, I don't know. Like, supposedly 4 people died in South Carolina. I know one person died, and actually in a town, like, 40 minutes away from where I live. Because it was, it's like this, like, I think it was an older guy that went out to his yard to try to clean tree branches during the middle of the wind. And during that, another tree limb came off and fell right on top of his head and killed him instantly. So it wasn't even near the coast. And there's like one death that's so inland because somebody was trying to go outside to clean his driveway during the middle of the storm.
And he got hit by a tree branch.
Yeah. I mean, coming from that little town, you figured I might know the person, but I don't. But I'm sure there's somebody that I know that knows somebody that knows somebody that knows who that guy is.
Some degrees of separation, I'm sure.
Yeah. I mean, it sucks, but it's just like, why are you going out in the middle of a freaking storm to clean debris when it's just going to get worse? Just wait till it completely passes. I guess the guy was so bored he had to go do something, like during the middle of a storm. It's like, don't do that.
Some people are obsessed with their yard.
I know. But
it is stupid.
Yeah, it can't stop that. I don't know, I got nothing else to say. This is actually kind of a shorter recording. We've got it under 2 hours.
Yeah, I think it's good.
Yeah, we've got enough content out now, so we got our general discussion thing I just put out. We've got this, and there's still the animation.
We covered 4 movies in like 1 week, you know?
Yeah. new record. And then we still got the movie, we got the Logan movie that we did like back in like June, and I've still got Animazement to put on. That con ended 4 months ago. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Those have been on the...
Three podcasts, including this one.
Those have been on the back burner for quite a while. We just, like, keep finding more current things to talk about and putting them up.
Well, in this case, I don't know that it's all that time sensitive, but maybe we should get it out because the right stuff is, you know, going to want to, have some evidence that we're watching their stuff.
Yeah, no, I plan on getting this out pretty soon. So
yeah, and then Logan, I guess we might as well get that out at some point because it's been out for quite a while.
Yeah, I know.
Although it's not like that movie's going anywhere. You know, if people have to go back and revisit something from 6 months ago, then so be it. I mean, it's a good movie. People should check out Logan.
Yeah. I think that's it for a review. I can't think of anything else to talk about for closing remarks.
Okay.
All right. So later, guys. See you next time on whatever the next episode might be after this. So till next time.
Later.
Shining Substation. Something to place soon to come true. We'll be there for you. Wait. Crap. I can't end it. Stupid pop-up. Stop! I don't need this many emails.
Reach for the speed, reach for the whistle, go where the rail may run. Reach for the words, reach for the story, follow the rainbow sun. To a shining time station, where dreams can come true, waiting there for you.
No, it was just the fact that it was a, you know, a girl that it came from like some sort of porn source or whatever. And it's a liked video and I'm just like, why would I care? Like, alright, I mean, who knows what else, how much porn this guy has. But like, that's none of my business.
I think what would be hilarious if he actually has like a bunch of gay porn on his computer or something.
That would be kind of funny.
Ted Cruz, or
talking about. I didn't know it was. Everyone's claiming that it's incest porn, and based on what I saw, I'm just
like, watch it.
No, I'm not gonna watch it either. But I'm just based on the image I saw, and I'm like, I mean, CG mentioned how like it looks like his wife, and I'm like, well, I mean, you know, if he's married and there's another girl that looks like his wife, I mean, like, shoot, like you. Get on with that all the time. So, I mean, it's none of my business. I don't care what Ted Cruz does in his private time or what he likes. It doesn't affect me one bit.
Yeah, I don't really like the guy, but I don't really care either.
Yeah, I don't know why the media wants to get on him because he is a political figurehead that happens to be super Christian, and Christians are all about, like, anti-porn.
Yeah, they call him up for his hypocrisy.
Yeah, for his hypocrisy, but it's just like, I don't know, he's also a guy first, I mean, really, and, like, what married guy doesn't have porn?
Are we having CG on for this episode?
Nah, I just wanted to hop in.
Have you seen Belladonna of Sadness, CG?
Unfortunately, no. So
okay, we were going to talk about that. But
oh, boy.
All right.
If you're looking for something pornographic, that would be
qualifying. I actually did want to see it. I just haven't gotten around to it yet.
It was on TCM over the weekend, so we saw it.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
All
right.
It's weird when they air anime like that. It's really rare.
Alright guys, I gotta hop out for now.
I think they aired some Miyazaki stuff one time. Okay, later.
Yeah, long
later.
Alright, see ya.
Okay. Well, we scared him off. You said yesterday he got on here and started making farting noises or something while I was gone?
Yes. Like, I kept hearing all those, like, weird fart noises, and then I was just like, what the hell? And he just starts laughing.
He was probably playing the Batman and Harley Quinn movie.
Or, sticking something up his butt.
Oh, the metal rod, probably.
Yeah. And just laughing about it. I don't know. It's none of my business. I don't want to know.
That's between him and Ted Cruz.
Hello? Yes, I am. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I'll do that real quick. Alright. Okay, well, I'm actually talking to someone online, but I can tell them that, yeah. I'll call you back. Alright, bye. I gotta check the amp wattage on an electrical panel, so it shouldn't take more than a minute. I'll just keep the recording going and just be like, hey, cut here.
Okay, just edit it out later and don't leave it in like a Peter Network kind of thing.
Yeah. Hello! It's my dad. He's calling about the amps on the electrical box.
And I just started Minecraft.
I just started Minecraft! Alright. I don't know. You can just play music or talk nonsense. I don't care. I'll be right back.
Okay. Thank you.
What the hell is this?
You said to play some music, so I put on Thomas the Tank Engine. That's true.
Oh my gosh. This is going to be some great zinger at the end of this episode.
Just play the horn from the engine earlier over this or something.
How long is this song?
Oh, it's ending.
Okay. Oh, never fails. Hey, at least you get the podcast episode interesting.
Yeah. That'll keep people entertained while you check the voltmeter or whatever.
Yeah,